In episode 138 of the Guitar Music Theory podcast, I answer more listener questions about arpeggios, practice structure, strumming and singing, 5/4 time signatures, parallel modes, and more. Greetings, guitar engineers. Welcome to the Guitar Music Theory podcast. I am your host, Desi Serna, and you're listening to the smooth sounds of Desi Serna. That's right. That's me playing along with a backing track, doing my own instrumental rendition of Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me. This is a video performance that I recently posted online to my social media profiles. Are you following me on social media? If not, go to Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and the others and search for Desi Serna Guitar, because if you're not following me, then you're missing out on great content like this. I'm going to talk more about some of my recent social media postings later in this podcast episode. But first, let's talk about the podcast episode. It's another Q&A. I've got some great questions I'm going to answer. I've got questions about arpeggios and structuring your practice and how to strum and sing and questions about 5/4 time signatures, parallel modes, the REM song King of Birds, and possibly a few others. It's going to be a great conversation, like it always is. But before we get started, what do you specifically need to be working on right now in order to be a better guitar player? Head to my website, guitarmusictheory.com, answer the question I ask you about your playing, and I'll send you free custom video instruction that is calibrated to your current level. All right, so we are ready to get started with our first question, and it comes from David, and he says, I am looking for a breakdown approach to the song Arpeggios from Hell by Yngwie Malmsteen. Okay, well, let's pull this up and listen to a bit of it. Okay, so that's what we're dealing with here. So Yngwie Malmsteen is a Swedish guitar player known for playing neoclassical, super fast, shreddy stuff. This song is called Arpeggios from Hell because, well, it includes a lot of arpeggios from hell, apparently. Okay, cool stuff. So to answer your question, David, I'm not going to be able to help you out with this, all right? So this is kind of beyond my area of expertise. This is not something that I'm going to put the time into working out or breaking down like I do some of my other songs. Yngwie is a great player, some cool stuff in there. I do actually teach some arpeggio and alternate picking and picking mechanic techniques in my book, Guitar Picking Mechanics. It's also sold separately as a video course, Guitar Picking Mechanics, on my website, guitarmusictheory.com. So go to Amazon and search Desi Serna Guitar Picking Mechanics, or go to my website and check out the video version. I talk a little bit about the techniques that you would use for this shred style, but I really focus more on more practical picking techniques that you would do in more popular styles of music. If you're looking for someone that's going to get more advanced into this shred style, I would recommend you search for Troy Grady or Chris Brooks. Find them online, go to their websites, view their social media profiles, see what they're putting out. And they might be able to help you. Troy Grady or Chris Brooks. And we are moving on to the next question. This comes from Dan, and he says, I'm feeling overwhelmed in trying to figure out the proper practice structure. What is your advice? How should I best approach this? All right, so I get this question a lot. It's one of the most common questions I get, and a lot of people just want to know, like, what should I practice? And typically they'll tell me, well, I like to spend 10 minutes, you know, reviewing my pentatonic scale patterns, and then I take 10 minutes and review my major scale patterns, and then I take 10 minutes with this particular picking exercise or something like that. Well, here's my answer to this question, and it's a good one. I like to structure my practice for a specific goal, and my goal is usually to build a song repertoire. I want my practice to lead somewhere, and I want that place to be my being able to perform music. So this is something that I help people with in private lessons. If you go to guitarmusictheory.com and click on the link to book a private lesson, we can connect using Zoom. And I can just ask you about your interests. I can kind of evaluate your playing and figure out, you know, where you are and what kind of things you should be working on now. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to select songs. That's my personal philosophy as a player and how I developed my own skills, and it's what I typically like to see my students do. Use songs as your exercises. Use songs to introduce you to new chord changes or riffs or melodies or solos that use scale patterns. Use songs to introduce you to technique. Sometimes people just need help choosing the right songs. Obviously, if you choose Arpeggios from Hell by Yngwie Malmsteen and you're not a player who is at that level, then you're getting way ahead of yourself. So I can help you select some songs that are appropriate for your level. But then as you structure your practice, then your practice should be structured with the goal of being able to perform music. You see, you actually want to do the same thing that a recording artist would do or a touring player would do. If you were a recording artist, you would be working on a collection of songs that you're going to record for your album. So all of your energy is going to go into those songs and refining your playing and composing your parts and practicing them and getting the right tones and the right take for those songs. If you're a touring player, you're going to have a collection of songs that's going to be part of the show, and you're going to learn those and practice those and rehearse those and work on the techniques needed to perform those songs, and you're going to get ready to go out on the road and perform that show. So if you're not a touring player or a recording artist, you still want to do the same thing. For you, it's just going to be you're probably not ready to compose your own songs yet because you probably don't have enough playing experience to do that sort of thing. So you want to work on putting together a repertoire of songs, a collection of songs, and maybe you record them. Maybe you record them, you know, using GarageBand or Logic or just your phone, or you make some videos to post to your Instagram or something like that. But now you have an end goal. You're going to say, well, I'm going to learn, you know, this song, and I'm going to record myself playing along with it, and I'm going to post it to my Instagram once I get a take that I'm satisfied with, and all my friends are going to comment on it and tell me how awesome I am. And you've got an end goal, and you're going to have kind of something tangible to show for yourself for the work that you've done. And so you're going to work on that song. You're going to work on memorizing that song and sharpening your playing and working on the techniques needed and dialing in your tones. And that's kind of what is going to help you determine how you should be practicing each day, right? Maybe your goal is you're going to have a collection of songs that you're just going to bust out a guitar and play for some friends or family members or something on a weekend. You just want to have a handful of songs that you can play and sing, or a handful of songs that you could pull up some tracks and play along with or something like that. You want to set that goal and then work towards hitting that goal. If your idea is that you're just going to get up every day and practice scales or practice an exercise or something, while that sort of thing does have its place at times, it's not really getting you somewhere specific. So I, again, like to structure my practice for a specific goal, and that goal is usually to build a repertoire of songs. If you need help with that, book a private lesson with me. It's not something you don't have to do weekly lessons or anything. Let's just go over some things together. I'll give you some ideas. I'll help get you started on that. And maybe you never need to come back and see me again. Maybe you want to come back once a month or once every other month, and just to get some more guidance like that. So just head to the website, guitarmusictheory.com, and click on that link for the private lessons, and you'll see all the information on how you can sign up for that. We are moving on to the next question. Mike asks, do you have any tips for learning to sing along while I play? Strumming the rhythm parts is a bit underwhelming as a performance. And he says, on a related note, I just got Fretboard Theory 1 and 2 in the mail. He's referring to the books. He would have ordered them off Amazon because that's the only place you can find them. And he says, you're filling in a lot of gaps that have remained open since I started playing in the mid-90s. Well, awesome, Mike. Glad I'm filling in gaps. That's the purpose of that. If you guys want to learn more about music theory for guitar and how familiar songs are composed, check out Fretboard Theory Volumes 1 and 2, or you can check out Guitar Theory for Dummies. Either title covers a very similar scope. You can find those titles on Amazon. Guitar Theory for Dummies is available in some bookstores, so you might be able to find it locally. So I just left off with the last question saying, hey, book a private lesson and I can help you with that. This is something that's best dealt with that way as well, helping you learn how to strum and sing songs at the same time. It's kind of case specific. You really need to just work with someone that can work specifically on the songs that you're playing, and we'll see where things are going wrong. And usually when it comes to playing and singing, usually the problem is that someone is just not very comfortable with the playing parts, so they're kind of getting ahead of themselves by trying to add singing on top of it. And, you know, I'm an electric here, but, you know, you got to get to the point where you can play common strum patterns without thinking about it. So I can sit here and talk to you and strum this strum pattern here at the same time, and I'm not going to have any problem because I'm so familiar with this strum pattern and how it feels. I don't even have to think about it. It's kind of a muscle memory thing. And so my hands just kind of go on autopilot and I can sing or talk right over the top of it. If you're not to that point where you can use simple common strum patterns without thinking about it, then you need to just work on that more. Learn more songs, play those songs down, and wait until you can do that without thinking about it, and then you can start working on singing at the same time. And then when you do start working on singing at the same time, you may have some snags because now the rhythm of the vocal phrases can be different than the rhythm that you're strumming. And so you're kind of doing two different things independently. But really, it's not independently. You learn how to put them together as one thing. And so what I can do is kind of watch you play, and then I'll notice, oh, you know, you're beginning that line on this beat, and so your hand is wanting to strum down on that beat as well. However, that's not where the strum is. The strum actually comes after that beat. And so I can point things like that out. So it's like, say the word, then feel that particular pick stroke, then so on. Like sometimes we just have to break it down. And we don't usually have to break down everything, but you just find those spots where you're getting off track and learn how they go together. And usually that kind of fixes things, and you can play the song smoothly once you kind of iron that stuff out. So I don't know if that's something that I can make a course on or a video on, because usually when I help people with that, again, it's just so case specific. Everyone's a little bit different about where they stumble and what's causing them to have problems with that. So honestly, the best thing to do, book a lesson with me. Let's connect on Zoom. Let's strum through some things. Let me see where you're running into snags, and I'll give you some tips on how you can fix some of those problems. Hey, I'm going to change gears here a little bit. So I mentioned that I was going to talk more about some of the videos I've been recently posting on social media. So I played a little bit of I Can't Make You Love Me, which is just a video I put together because I love that song, and I just wanted to see if I could. I actually used to play that years ago when I would do like some kind of solo gigs stuff where I'd sing and play guitar or play with a track, if it was like a dinner music, background music sort of thing. And so you can check that out on my social media profiles. But I've got some other things. I wanted to share this video that's titled Getting Jiggy With It, Guitar Loop. I had a lot of fun with this. And let me just get into this. So you're hearing the video here. And check this out. Come on now. There we go. So what I'm doing, I'm using my looper pedal. And I'm putting down some different layers. This is layer 2. Then I go to a layer 3. This is a bass line. And now I'm going to switch and just jam, play a lead guitar solo. I'm going to loop this lead part now, and I'm going to harmonize with it. Here we go. And that's it. I'm done. And I'm walking away, and the loop is still playing. Isn't that cool? So let me tell you how that came about. I was just jamming along with a song, and I can't remember what it was on Spotify. I think I might have been preparing for some other lesson or something I was doing. And the song ended, and then Spotify just auto-shuffled and played the next song, and it was Getting Jiggy With It by Will Smith. And I used to play that song in, you know, dance bands back in the 90s. And so I started playing along with it and kind of remembering some of the parts and remembering that bass line and stuff. And I thought, wait a minute. This would be really cool. Like this would work as a loop, because I can just loop these parts and put them together. So I've got a looper pedal that's built right into my Kemper Profiler remote foot controller, and so I put the pieces together, and it was pretty cool. And then I just started jamming over it and having some fun. And I thought, well, this will make a really cool video. So I spent some more time kind of refining my ideas for the lead. And once I had settled on something that I thought was kind of cool, then I turned the cameras on. And it did take a couple of takes. I made some mistakes. So this is what you heard there was... it was actually the first full take, because initially my mistakes were like I hit the looper foot switch. I didn't hit it in time or something, or I messed up something I was looping, so I had to start over. But the first time I actually got through the whole idea that I had planned, I don't know, maybe it was take 4 or 5 or something like that. I said, I'm taking that, and that's what you see in the video. So you can go to Facebook or Instagram or YouTube or TikTok and search Desi Cerna Guitar, and you can watch that video. I actually put tab in the video so you can see specifically what I was playing for the main parts of the loop that I took from the song. The guitar solo, I didn't tab out. I just went for it, and I wasn't going to go through all the trouble of tabbing that whole thing out. But make sure you're following Desi Cerna Guitar. And I've got some more videos that I'm going to talk about in a bit. But when you do watch those videos, click like, comment, share. That's going to just, the more interactions I get with the videos, the better. I make these videos for a couple different reasons. I mean, I guess one is just entertainment purposes. One is because they're good supplements to the books and the video courses that I sell, you know. I like you to see me putting into practice some of the things that I teach you how to do in my books and video courses. But another reason is because I don't advertise. So this is how I get exposure and how new people find me and eventually, hopefully, become customers that purchase something from me, because that's what keeps this whole operation going, including this podcast. So one way that you can help support what I do is make sure you're watching my content, you're interacting with it, and you're sharing it so it gets in front of more guitar players. Now, you could share this stuff on your own personal social media profiles, but actually the best way to do it would be to share it in a guitar group, specifically Facebook. Facebook is where I get the most interactions by far. So that would be my first recommendation for you, is go to Facebook and follow me there. And then you can join some different guitar groups on Facebook. Just search the groups and look at the guitar groups and get into those groups. And then you can share content in there. And that's where you're really going to get my videos in front of other guitar players. And that would be really, really helpful. So I'll talk more about that, more about these videos later. But for now, let's move on to our next question. It comes from Oliver, and he says, I would like a video of a great piece, but played on guitar, called Take Five by Dave Brubeck. He's saying this is the song Take Five by Dave Brubeck is a great piece, and he'd like a video on it, but he wants me to play it on guitar. yeah, I don't know that I'm going to get around to doing that sort of thing. Kind of like that Yngwie Malmsteen request from earlier. This is a little kind of out of my wheelhouse here. Well, let's play a little bit of it. It is a cool song. I am familiar with it for reasons I will explain in a second. Let's see how astute my podcast listeners are. Do you notice anything unusual about this music? What's unusual about it is that it's in the time signature of 5/4. And that's pretty unusual. So instead of 4/4, you know, four quarter notes per measure, 1, 2, 3, 4, like the majority of music, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or actually it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, yeah, like that. 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Very unusual. But the way that the melody is composed and everything, it fits over the fives. So maybe maybe this doesn't sound unusual to you because they make it work. But I'm not going to do a breakdown of, I'm not likely to ever do a guitar breakdown of this. But I thought, well, let me just talk about it briefly. And while we're on the topic of 5/4 time signatures, off the top of my head, here's another song that uses the same time signature. This is called Living in the Past by Jethro Tull. Really cool song. And if you count this out, it's in 5/4, which is very unusual. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. Singing here. There we go. Nope. It's coming. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There we go.
And I'm smiling, walk a mile to drink your water.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Anyway, copyright police probably going to come after me for playing all this music here. So look that up. Dave Brubeck, Take Five, or Jethro Tull, Living in the Past. Good examples of using the 5/4 time signature. An unusual time signature. It doesn't come up that often. I mean, you know, it probably comes up in some like Rush songs or something every now and then, or Dream Theater, you know, bands that like specifically try to do things a little differently. It's actually, I used to have to play the song Raindrops Are Falling on My Head by BJ Thomas. You know that? And at the end of the song, I believe there's a 5/4 section. And I'm not really any more prepared to talk about that one. So maybe I shouldn't have brought that one up. But you can check that one out as well. We're going to move on, and this is really more like a testimonial than a question. This comes from Jim, and he says, "Hi, Desi. Just wanted you to know that I recently reached a major milestone in my guitar learning journey thanks to you and your course material. 2.5 years ago, at the ripe age of 60, I started to pursue a lifelong goal to learn guitar and understand how music works. Today, with a foundation built on your courses, I am able to spend hours with coffee house playing on XM radio in the background and can play along with these songs. I can find the tonic, determine the key to the song, understand the mode, and play along with the song all along the fretboard connecting major and minor scale patterns and riff boxes. Often I can play along with the melody, and although my repertoire is small and simple, I can play little 3-4 note riffs in the melody gaps. I can't tell you how much I've always wanted to do this and how much enjoyment it gives me. Thanks again for your passion to help others learn and for your awesome teaching skills. It has certainly made a difference in my life." Oh, gosh. I'm going to cry. Thanks, Jim. I actually get testimonials like this frequently. And you can read my reviews for my books on Amazon. I got hundreds of 5-star reviews, and people say a lot of the same things. So, man, that's great. You know, I do love what I do. I love learning guitar. And I love teaching too. And I love just, I learned a long time ago that I do have a knack for, analyzing things and, teaching things in a manner that helps people understand them better and, really helps to kind of just speed up the learning process and maybe just introduce perspectives that you didn't really think about that does change how you hear music and play music and your ability to play and stuff. So check out my guitar theory books, Fretboard Theory or Guitar Theory for Dummies. A lot of people opt for the video version of Fretboard Theory because they want to see and hear everything in action. And so I really added a lot of content to that video course. And that's really where you're going to get the most valuable instruction I have to offer that covers those topics. Just keep in mind, don't get ahead of yourself, all right? In the beginning stages, you just got to learn how to play. You got to develop your general playing skills. You got to build a repertoire of playing songs, simple songs, and stuff like that. I've got video instruction that can help you with that as well. I got free stuff. Just go to the website, answer the question about your playing, and I'll get you started. But once you have your general playing skills, you can play along with songs using open chords, power chords, and bar chords. Then that's the best time to really start learning more about music because you're going to be able to make sense of it better and you're going to be able to actually apply it. If you're reading about, you know, a particular type of chord progression or chord or scale or riff or something, but you don't have the playing skills yet to actually do what I'm talking about, then you're getting ahead of yourself. Even though in your mind you might think it sounds interesting, or maybe you might think, you know, learn the theory first. I don't think so. I think you got to get your hands in shape first. Learn how to actually physically be able to play. Then let's talk about what you're playing. So, all right, thanks, Jim. That was a great testimonial, and it just makes my day to know that my instruction is working so well for someone. And we're moving on. Eric says, "I understand modes theoretically from both relative and parallel perspectives and would like to know more about why you favor teaching them as you do. Why do you reserve parallel studies until the later stages of Fretboard Theory Volume 2? Why don't you teach parallel modes from the beginning?" And let's see, my answer to Eric was, in order to understand modes, you need to understand the fundamental concept first. Then you can explore different directions to take things in, such as modal mixture, mixing parallel modes, and so on. Most people struggle with modes because they never fully understand the fundamental concept, so I focus on the fundamentals first. One of the things you'll notice if you read, for example, the reviews of my book, Fretboard Theory, one of the things that's mentioned more than anything else is modes, because that's a topic that a lot of people are really confused about. There's a lot of misleading information about modes out there, and people get the wrong idea of what they are, and they really get on the wrong track with it. And so when they read my book and I clear everything up, And I explained that, like, this is how the concept works. This is how it's used in familiar songs. It's like huge light bulb that goes off in people's heads, and they find that extremely helpful and useful. And it's like a big revelation for them. Modes are not some sort of geeky theoretical concept that doesn't have a practical application. Everything is kind of in a mode. And so it is an important part of music composition that you need to know. I don't know why so much of the information out there about modes is so misleading, but it is. It confused the snot out of me for years, and I thought it was a dumb idea until I finally sorted things out. And I was like, wait a minute, this is an important idea. Why are people not teaching this correctly? So what I do in Fretboard Theory Volume 1 is I introduce the fundamental idea behind modes. It just involves the major scale and how you harmonize it to make chords and play chord progressions. And then you can use the scale over the top for your melodies and stuff. And then I explained that, well, when you're playing the major scale, you don't have to use the first degree as like your tonic pitch. You can use a major scale, but you can center on the second degree. Bit of light my fire by the doors there. So that's same major scale I played earlier, but now I'm focusing on the second scale degree and using that as my starting point. And all of a sudden, the whole structure of the scale changes and the whole sound and the mood, and that's called a mode. And you can do that with all the different degrees of the major scale. And so I show you that in Fretboard Theory Volume 1, and I reference familiar songs, and I say, go listen to this song, play along, use this scale pattern, and boom! You're going to be playing a mode and it's going to sound awesome. Now, in Fretboard Theory Volume 2, I show you like where else you could take that concept. And one of the things I talk about is parallel scales. And so Eric here is saying, well, why didn't you start with the concept that way? And that's often the way that people do start with modes. What they do is they say, well, let's take G. And we could start on G and we could play a G major scale. They say, or we could start on G and we could play a G Dorian scale. They say, or we can start on G and play a G Mixolydian scale. And so you're trying to memorize all these different scales and these different patterns. But what people fail to realize is that all of those different modes are actually just major scale patterns. You're just using them differently. Every major scale has within it all the modes. The G major scale is G Ionian mode, that means G major scale, or it's A Dorian mode, B Phrygian mode, C Lydian mode, D Mixolydian mode, E Aeolian mode. Technically it's F sharp Locrian mode, although that doesn't get used. But the point is, you don't have to learn scale patterns for G major scale, A Dorian scale, B Phrygian. You can just use the same exact patterns because it's all the same. And you just realize that, oh, these patterns can be any one of those modes depending on how it's actually getting used in the music. And that's a big light bulb moment for a lot of people because they realize, I don't have to remember seven different types of scale patterns. I just have to remember one, the major scale, and then I learn how the major scale has contained within it all of these modes. I probably already confused you there, but check out the books. I introduce it very simply. You got the patterns there. I make song references. One of the things I do is I say, put on this song and let that song play in the background and play through this scale pattern. Okay, now put on this song and play through that same scale pattern again. Notice how the sound changed. Why did it change? Because song number one is using, G as the tonic pitch. Song number two uses the very same scale, but it's using A as the tonic pitch. And that's the difference between G Ionian mode and A Dorian mode. So that's what you want to do. Learn, go back to the basics, learn the fundamental modal concept first. Then you can get into some of these different perspectives about viewing it as parallel scales and other things. And I don't even want to confuse you with that stuff right now. But I do cover that in Fretboard Theory Volume 2, and that stuff is useful, but you gotta know the fundamental concept like the back of your hand first. Otherwise, you're just gonna get confused as you get into some of the other things that you do with modes. And you know what? Since I brought that up, one of the videos I posted recently is called Major 7 Chord Hack, and I'll play a little bit of it. Check this out. I may have misspoke. It's called, did I say minor 7 chord hack or major 7 chord hack? I actually have both videos. A while ago, I made a video called Major 7 Chord Hack, and it's where I show you how you can take basic minor chord shapes and you can actually use them to create the sound of major 7 chords. And you can play major 7 chord inversions without having to learn new chord shapes. Learn how to just take a minor chord shape. B minor is G major 7, if you're playing that B minor chord like this, but if you put a G in the bass, oh, it's a G major 7. So then you can, you know, go around the fretboard and play different G major 7 like chord inversions without having to learn new shapes. Just use a simple minor shape. Very useful. Musicians do that all the time. And then recently I did the opposite of that, where you take major chords, like C major becomes A minor 7 if you put an A in the bass. Or D major becomes B minor 7 if you put B in the bass. And so you can move around the fretboard using really familiar major chord shapes, but you're actually playing minor chord inversions. That's what I was doing in the video there. And it's a really cool sound, and it's a super, it's a simple idea physically on the fretboard because you're using major chord shapes that you're already, should already be familiar with. And it's a really good hack, and this is how a lot of guitar players view the fretboard. I do this thing all the time. Sometimes if you see players just like moving all over the fretboard freely with all these chord shapes, you might think, wow, how do they keep track of everything? How do they know how to play all those chord shapes? There's often little shortcuts at play, and this is one of them. So this is yet another reason why you want to make sure that you are following me on social media, because sometimes I post some really good free stuff like this. This is like a 10-minute video where I walk you through the idea. And when you check it out, of course, make sure you like, comment, and share. Make sure you're subscribing and following and all that good stuff. Desi Cerna Guitar, find me on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook is my definitely the best performing platform. I'm working on Instagram. It's doing really well. YouTube is pretty much sucking now, but I'm still posting my stuff to YouTube. TikTok is blah, kind of hit or miss, but if you like that platform and you're on it, look me up. I'm there. We are moving on. This next question is about the song King of Birds by REM. I want to play a little bit of this for you. Let's put it on. Copyright police are going to be writing me up for lots of tickets today. I had never heard this song, but it's cool. It's in D, at least that's the first chord here. Sounds like D major.
A thumbnail sketch of jeweler's stone. A mean idea to call my own. Old man, don't lay so still, you're not yet young. There's time to teach point to point, point observation. Children carry reservations, standing on the shoulders of giants.
Okay. Okay, so let's get to the question here. I want you to hear some of that song first. So this person says, I love your podcast. I have a question about REM's King of Birds off the Document album. It's not a well-known song, definitely not a single. However, it's got kind of a drone-like sound to it. It did there, yeah. He says, I feel like it's in D major, but maybe also it's in A Mixolydian. He says, I know there's a D, and then later there's a G, F sharp, and then there's an A. Then there's this cool lift to the song later where there's a B to an E. Let's get to that. There's the G. F sharp minor. A. Back to D. I'm gonna. There we go. B. There's an E major. Back to D. So his question is, like, what key is this in? What mode is this? These chords don't seem to fit together. Nope, they don't. Okay, we have a couple different things going on here. So whenever I hear a song like this that seems to, that doesn't fit into one key, what I try to do is just take it section by section and figure out how I can at least group some chords into some keys, but I realize that there's going to be multiple keys here. All right, that's what's happening. So let me just tell you my observations as I listen to this song. The first thing I notice is that it is a D major chord. I did hear an F sharp in the vocal melody and some of the other instrumentation. But I also heard a flat 7 in there. C natural. So, that tells me it's D Mixolydian mode. All right, got the flat 7 in there. And then later when it goes to the G chord, F sharp minor, and then A, well, I immediately recognize, well, those songs would be out of the D Ionian mode, the D major scale. Right? So this part of the song, I guess, maybe makes most sense. If a song's in D, you would assume it to be D major. So we had D Mixolydian initially, but now D major here is where the G comes from, F sharp minor, and A. But then later, you know, you really get thrown for a loop because they introduce B major and E major, which are not in the key of D, Mixolydian, or Ionian at all. And I'm just hearing that as a total complete key change to the key of B. I don't know what was going through their minds when they wrote this, but I know that as a player, when I'm trying to learn this song, or if I was going to play along or play over it, that's how I'm going to break it down. So if I back this up a little bit. All right, so this is D. D Mixolydian mode. I thought I was going to go to the other chords. When it goes to the other chords, I'm going to, right here. This is just D major scale. I'm just playing through the D major scale here. That's straight at D major scale. And then there's the B.
Mm-hmm.
playing a B major scale so you can see how it fits with these chords. And it's going to go back to D. Okay, I realized that was not the most inspiring playing, people. I was just keeping this simple so you could just see basically how the scales work over this. So that's what goes through my head as a player, and that helps me that helps me keep track of things. That makes sense in my head. I'm like, okay, D Mixolydian mode, then playing D major scale, then key change to B major. And if I was going to add in extra parts, I'm going to be thinking about that flat 7 for the D Mixolydian mode initially. Then I'm going to realize now use the major 7 as the chords are now out of the plain major D major for the next section. And then I'm going to think about switching scales and switching notes to B major for that that B to E section. So yeah, cool tune. That's my analysis, and I hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to move on. And I'm going to go back and talk about social media. So I'm on Facebook here. So, I didn't talk about the bass arpeggio video. I got a video called How to Use Bass Arpeggios. And I use a portion of a song that I played at church. And if you're a church-going person, you'll love it. If you're not, don't worry. You'll still love it. It's a great example here. I'm going to start this video. Listen to how the bass is moving through these chord changes here. This is cool. Isn't that cool? Did you hear that? And let me play a little bit more of this song. I got a whole video where I play it. I talk about what I'm doing, and then I play some more of it. Here's some more of it. So, no arpeggios here. Arpeggios. Here. Yeah, this is a great song. It's called Grace Upon Grace by Brooks and Boggs. You can find it on Apple Music, Spotify, all that good stuff. So they actually are songwriters and worship leaders who are part of the same church network that I'm part of here. And I didn't actually know that until I looked it up afterwards. It was just on the Sunday morning set list, and I had to learn it. And I just noticed that at the end of this song, for the final chorus, in order to make it sound more climactic, the bass player suddenly just wasn't just playing the basic changes. He introduced this melodic line that was based directly on the chord tones of the chords using arpeggio patterns. And it was really well done, and I really enjoyed playing it. And I thought, I need to make a video, because sometimes I get questions where people are like, well, you know, how do you use arpeggios? Or how do you use arpeggios on bass, specifically, some people will ask me. So that's a great example of that. And I don't really need to say much more, because you can go to Facebook or Instagram and just search Desi Cerna Guitar. Look for the video that says how to use bass arpeggios, and I explain what I'm doing there and how that works. Sometimes the videos I post are tutorial videos like that. Sometimes I just post videos of me just jamming and you know, having fun, like this one here. I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight by Cutting Crew. That's me over at Tone Junkie with some amazing amps behind me and some cool guitars. And I'm actually playing an Eddie Van Halen guitar there. It's pretty cool. Thank you, Facebook. I've seen enough of that. So I've got some cool stuff. I got me playing some Stevie Ray Vaughan on a PRS guitar. I got me playing a Les Paul with some P90 pickups, doing a little bit of Hideaway, the old Freddie King blues classic. And there's lots of cool stuff here. And I don't know if all of my podcast listeners are also following me on social media, but you might be missing some of this stuff. And so I wanted to bring that to your attention. And also, I can use your support. So make sure you're following Desi Cerna Guitar and make sure you're interacting with my content. That helps it perform better, and that increases my exposure. And that's a great way that you can just show me appreciation and support. All right, podcast 138 is a wrap, and I'm going to wrap this up real quick so you can be delighted by the smooth sounds of Desi Cerna. So until next time, keep playing and stay tuned for more.